Sahanavavatu Sahanao Bhunatu Sahaviryankaravavahai Tejasvinavaditamastomavidvishavahai Om Shanti 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 Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare.
So page 64. Srila Prabhupada adds, okay, so this is from the Rishis Continued, divisions of generalization and specification, such as nationality and individuality, are the imaginations of persons who are not advanced in knowledge. Srila Prabhupada adds, actually there are two energies, namely material and spiritual. Both of them are ever-existing because they are emanations from the eternal truth, the Supreme Lord. Because the individual soul, the individual living entity, has desire to act in forgetfulness of his original identity since time immemorial, he is accepting different positions in material bodies and being designated according to many divisions of nationality, community, society, species, and so on. Right, so we have our original identity, so we either identify there, or if we identify here, then it will always be these changing different positions according to nationality, community, society, species, and so on. So we'll have designations in all those. Verses 9 to 16. King Chitraketu accepts the sage's authority. Sri Sugiradi Goswami continued, thus enlightened by the instructions of Narada and Angira, King Chitraketu became hopeful with knowledge. Wiping his shriveled face with his hand, the king began to speak. 9. King Chitraketu said, you have both come here dressed like avadhutas, liberated persons, just to cover your identities. But I see that that of all men you are the most elevated in awareness. 19. Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur points out, the two sages as dressed as mendicants to hide their identity. Right, because they're acting as mendicants, so that means then they're, how you say? You know, sannyasis, so that way then they're within the Varnashram system. But what he says is you're covering your actual identity, which is above the system. You know, the Paramahamsas. Right? You know everything as it is. Therefore, you are the greatest of all personalities. Brahmanas, who are exalted to the position of Vaishnavas, the most dear servants of Krishna, sometimes dressed like madmen, just to benefit materialists like us, who are always attracted to sense gratification, and just to dissipate our ignorance. These Vaishnavas wander on the surface of the globe according to their desire. O great souls, I have heard that among the great and perfect persons wandering the surface of the earth, to instruct knowledge to people covered by ignorance are Sanat Kumar, Narada, Ribhu, Angira, Devala, Asita, Apantaratama, another name of Vyasadeva. Markandeya, Gotama, Vashishta, Bhagavan Parasuram, Kapila, Sukadev, Durvasa, Yajnavalkya, Jatukarna, and Aruni. Others are Romasha, Shavana, Dattatreya, Asuri, Patanjali, the great sage Dhaumya, who is like the head of the Vedas, the sage Panchashika, Hiranya Nabha, Kaushalya, Shutadeva, and Rita Dvaja. Oh, Rita Dvaja. You must certainly be among them. Srila Prabhupada comments. Okay, so he can't even tell who they are. So it appears that they're dressed either as I say. They're dressed like avadhutas, not like, so they're not dressed like, just the Paramahamsas in their standard, very simple dress. They're not dressed as sannyasis, they're dressed avadhutas, so it just means they just kind of wear any kind of old clothes and stuff like that. So you can't really tell who they are. So he doesn't even know that this is Narada and Asita. Angira. Srila Prabhupada comments, the word jnana hetava is very significant, because great personalities like those listed in these verses wander on the surface of the globe, not to mislead the populace, but to distribute real knowledge. Without this knowledge, human life is wasted. The human form of life is meant for realization of one's relationship with Krishna or God. One who lacks this knowledge is categorized among the animals. Right? Four-legged, two-legged, no-legged, many-legged, anything like that. King Chitraketu continued, because you are great personalities, you can give me real knowledge. I am as foolish as a village animal, like a pig or dog, because I emerge in the darkness of ignorance. Therefore, please ignite the torch of knowledge to save me. 16. Srila Prabhupada comments, this is the way to receive knowledge. One must submit oneself at the lotus feet of great personalities who can actually deliver transcendental knowledge. It is therefore said, Tasmat Gurum Prapatyeta Jigyasu Shre Uttamam, Srimad Bhagavatam 11.321. One who is inquisitive to understand the highest goal and benefit of life must approach a bona fide spiritual master and surrender unto him. Only one who is actually eager to receive knowledge to eradicate the darkness of ignorance is eligible to approach a guru or spiritual master. The guru should not be approached for material benefits. One should not approach a guru just to cure some disease or receive some miraculous benefit. This is not the way to approach the guru. Tad vijnan artam. One should approach the guru to understand the transcendental science of spiritual life. Unfortunately, in this age of Kali, there are many bogus gurus who display magic to their disciples, and many foolish disciples want to see such magic for material benefits. These disciples are not interested in pursuing spiritual life to save themselves from the darkness of ignorance. It is said, Oma jnana timirandasya jnananjana shalakaya chakshu unmilitang jena tasmai shri gurave namaha. I was born in the darkest ignorance, and my spiritual master opened my eyes with the torch of knowledge. I offer my respectful obeisances unto him. This gives the definition of the guru. Everyone is in the darkest of ignorance. Therefore, everyone needs to be enlightened with transcendental knowledge. One who enlightens his disciple and saves him from rotting in the darkness of ignorance in this material world is a true guru. Right? So we see here as they are, because they've made the point, and Chitraketu, he will become. Right? Because he actually gives proper instruction, for the benefit of Indra, even though Indra doesn't really fully able to take advantage of it. But he gives that instruction. Verses 17 to 28. The rishis bring Chitraketu towards the Brahma-Bhuta stage. Angira said, my dear king, when you desired to have a son, I approached you. Indeed, I am the same Angira rishi who gave you this son. As for this rishi, he is the great sage Narada, the direct son of Lord Brahma. So is Angira, but they're both. My dear king, you are an advanced devotee of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. To be absorbed in lamentation for the loss of something material is unsuitable for a person like you. Therefore, we have both come to relieve you from this false lamentation, which is due to your being merged in the darkness of ignorance. For those who are advanced in spiritual knowledge, to be affected by material loss and gain is not at all desirable. 17 to 19. Srila Prabhupada comments, a devotee should always aspire to live in the association of advanced devotees and engage in the service of the Lord through the parampara system. One should serve the mission of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu through the instructions of the great Goswamis of Vrindavan. This is called Tandara Charana Sevi. While serving the lotus feet of the Goswamis, one should live in the association of devotees, Bhakta Sanivas. Right? So then we're serving these instructions of the great personalities, Tadara Charana Sevi. And while we're doing that, we should live in the associations, Bhakta Sanivas. Right? This is the business of a devotee. A devotee should not aspire for material profit or lament for material loss. When Angira Rishi and Narada saw that Maharaj Chitraketu, an advanced devotee, had fallen in the darkness of ignorance and was lamenting for the material body of his son, by their causeless mercy they came to advise him so that he could be saved from this ignorance. Angira Rishi continued, "When I first came to your home, I could have given you the supreme transcendental knowledge, but when I saw that your mind was absorbed in material things, I gave you only a son, who caused you jubilation and lamentation. My dear king, now you are actually experiencing the misery of a person who has sons and daughters. O king, owner of the state of Surasena, one's wife, his house, the opulence of his kingdom, and his various other opulences and objects of sense perception are all the same in that they are temporary. One's kingdom, military power, treasury, servants, ministers, friends, and relatives are all causes of fear, illusion, lamentation, and distress. They are like a Gandharva Nagara, a non-existent palace that one imagines to exist in the forest. Because they are impermanent, they are no better than illusions, dreams, and mental concoctions." Right? So people dream up these things that there is something there when there actually isn't. Right? Interesting is that there's the Vedic idea, the Gandharva, what did he say? Gandharva Nagara, you know, the palace of the Gandharvas, right? And so then there's in the Western concept, then they have, you know, it's elves that are out there and their whole scene in that. You know, so it's all still the same imagined aspect. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakura elaborates, "It has been said that wife and other objects, because of being temporary, are not real, and because of appearing and disappearing, are a cause of suffering. Besides these things, other things also, which are causes of lamentation, illusion, fear, and pain, are false. One perceives that dream objects are false when waking from a dream. Objects which appear through dreams, magic, or imagination are false, like a Gandharva city." Okay, so even though when one wakes up, these other things are still there in the perception, they're only temporary, so they're actually in the same category. Right? But it's just that in dreams, you don't have any specific duties. But when you wake up, you have duties. So you work with what is here. And you engage everything in Krishna's service. So all the different relationships, everything go on nicely. Because the principle is that we're dealing with everything in relation to Krishna. Right? All things, all people, all relationships, all situations. So then that remains well. Right? So it's just a matter of then we're good at that here, then we can transfer to the spiritual world, right? But if we think that the things of this world, the temporary things, are permanent, then the problem is then we have to stay here to experience the quote-unquote permanence. Otherwise, we understand this is not of substance, the spiritual world is of substance. Therefore, we go there to experience that real permanence or actual permanence. Right? So permanence you'll get. It's just whether it's the real one or not the real one. Angira Rishi continued, "The living entity in the bodily conception of life is absorbed in the body, which is a combination of the physical elements, the five senses for gathering knowledge, and the five senses of action, along with the mind." Right? So body, mind, and words. Right, so the words means the five senses for gathering knowledge and the five senses of action. Right, that's where you can tell because they're controlled by the intelligence. Right, so words means then you can tell what kind of intelligence they have and how they're engaging their senses by what they speak. Right, does that make sense? Though the mind, through the mind, the living entity suffers three kinds of tribulations. Adibhautika, Adidaivaka, and Adiatmika. Therefore, the body is the source of all miseries. Srila Prabhupada comments. In the fifth canto, 5.5.4, while instructing his sons, Rishabhdev said, "Asan napi kleshada asha deha." The body, although temporary, is the cause of all the miseries of material existence. As already discussed in the previous verse, the entire material creation is based on mental concoction, right? Because we decide that this is going to be enjoyable, this is going to be, you know, nice, or this is me, or this is mine. You understand? So it's a concoction because it's all just dead matter that is empowered by Krishna's potency and you know, including the living entities. So you put that all together, and then we decide, oh, this is good, this is bad, and all these different things. The mind sometimes induces us to think that if we purchase an automobile, we can enjoy the physical elements, such as earth, water, air, and fire, combined in forms of iron, plastic, petrol, and so on. Working with the five material elements, panchabhutas, as well as with our five knowledge-gathering senses, like the eyes, ears, tongue, and our five active senses, like the hands and legs, we become involved in the material condition. Thus, we are subjected to the tribulations known as adhyatmika, adhidaivika, and adhibhautika. The mind is the center because the mind creates all these things. As soon as the material object is struck, however, the mind is affected, and we suffer. For example, with the material elements, the working senses and the knowledge-gathering senses, we create a very nice car. And when the car is accidentally smashed in a collision, the mind suffers. Through the mind, the living entity suffers, right? Because definitely nothing happened to us, but because we identify with the car, or at least with the benefits of the car, or the experience of the car, therefore we suffer. Right? Because we have, then there's options, we lose, then we lose those options. The fact is that the living entity, while concocting with the mind, creates the material condition, because matter is destructible. Through the material condition, the living entity suffers. Otherwise, the living entity is detached from all material conditions. When one comes to the Brahman platform, the platform of spiritual life, fully understanding that he is a spiritual soul, aham brahmasmi, he is no longer affected by lamentation or hankering. As the Lord says in Bhagavad Gita 18:54, Brahma Bhuta Prasannatma Na Shochati Na Kankshati. One who is thus transcendentally situated at once realizes the Supreme Brahman and becomes fully joyful. He never laments nor desires to have anything. So the Supreme Brahman means that the Lord himself, not just Brahman. So when you understand Krishna, that's the Supreme, then you become fully joyful. So full Supreme Brahman, fully joyful. Brahman, joyful. Material world, then that's up for discussion. Right? So he never laments nor desires to have anything. So there's nothing that has been lost, there's nothing to gain. Angira Rishi concluded, Therefore, O King Chitraketu, carefully consider the position of the Atma. In other words, try to understand who you are, whether body, mind, or soul. Consider where you have come from, where you are going after giving up this body, and why you are under the control of material lamentation. Try to understand your real position in this way, and then you will be able to give up your unnecessary attachment. You will also be able to give up the belief that this material world or anything not directly in touch with service to Krishna is eternal. Okay. You will also be able to give up the belief that this material world or anything not directly in touch with service to Krishna is eternal. Right. So we always think that it'll go on, it's going to be like that forever. Thus you'll attain peace. When you understand it's temporary, then one becomes peaceful because everything goes, changes anyway. So there's a bad situation, it's temporary. It'll go away. Srila Prabhupada advises, the Krishna consciousness movement is factually endeavoring to bring human society to a sober condition. Because of a misdirected civilization, people are jumping in materialistic life like cats and dogs, performing all sorts of abominable sinful actions and becoming increasingly entangled. The Krishna consciousness movement includes self-realization, because one is first directed by Lord Krishna to understand that one is not the body, but the owner of the body. When one understands this simple fact, he can direct himself towards the goal of life. When one understands this simple fact, okay, because people are not educated in terms of the goal of life, they are working like madmen and becoming more and more attached to the material atmosphere. The misguided man accepts the material condition as everlasting. One must give up his faith in material things and give up attachment for them. Then one will be sober and peaceful. So giving up attachment doesn't mean that you don't work with them. It just means that you give up attachment that's why you're working with them. Right? We work with things because they're useful in Krishna's service. If we're working just because we're attached, then there'll always be a cause of suffering. But if we're working with them because they're valuable in Krishna's service, that's just for Krishna, then that's when we'll be sober and peaceful. The great sage Narada continued, "My dear king, attentively receive from me a mantra which is most auspicious." Footnote 20. According to Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, the mantra given by Narada, quote, "embodied the Upanishads," end quote. "After accepting it from me, in 7 nights you will be able to see the Lord face to face. My dear king, in former days, Lord Shiva and other demigods took shelter of the lotus feet of Sankarsana. Thus they immediately got free from the illusion of duality and achieved unequaled and unsurpassed glories in spiritual life. You will very soon attain that very same position." 27 to 28. I thought there was one more section. Okay. So then we have chapter 16. King Chitraketu meets the Supreme Lord. Pratigya. The perfection of life is to be spiritually educated and to understand the existence of the Lord and how he creates, maintains, and annihilates the cosmic manifestation. The Pratigya of this chapter is taken from Srila Prabhupada's purport to verse 50. Right, so this perfection means that establishes on the spiritual platform. We understand how Krishna, the existence of the Lord, us, the Lord, how he creates, maintains, and destroys. One understands that, then one actually comes to the transcendental platform. Because nothing is seen on the material platform. Chapter 16 summarizes questions and answers. King Chitraketu's re-embodied son poses a few rhetorical questions to Narad Muni in verse 4, but they do not fall under the study. Likewise, King Chitraketu utters a few rhetorical questions in verses 42 and 44, and the Supreme Lord places one in verse 56. These also do not fall under the study. Right? It's just being mentioned because otherwise one may say, well, there are questions why it's not covered. Adhyaya Prakashika. In the 16th chapter, Chitraketu is enlightened by the words of his dead son, receives a mantra from Narada, praises Sankarsana, and receives knowledge from Sankarsana. Busy chapter. As related in this chapter, Chitraketu was able to talk with his dead son and hear from him the truth of life. When Chitraketu was appeased, the great sage Narada gave him a mantra. By chanting this mantra, Chitraketu found shelter at the lotus feet of Sankarsana. The living entity is eternal. Thus he has neither birth nor death. Nahanyate hanyamane sharire. Bhagavad Gita 2.20. According to the reactions of one's fruitive activities, one takes birth in various species of life among the birds, beasts, trees, human beings, demigods, and so on, thus rotating through various bodies. For a certain period of time, one receives a particular type of body as a son or father in a false relationship. All our relationships in this material world with friends, relatives, or enemies consist of duality, in which one feels happy and distressed on the basis of illusion. The living entity is actually a spirit soul who is part and parcel of God and has nothing to do with relationships in the world of duality. Therefore, Narad Muni advised Chitraketu not to lament for his so-called dead son. Right, because so-called dead son, because he's not dead, and neither is he his son. Right? The soul is still alive and well, and he's not the body. Right? So in all aspects. So, therefore, it has nothing to do with relationships in the world of duality. So, we're basing relationships on the material platform. We don't actually have anything to do with them because the soul is transcendental. We have relationship with devotees because that's actually on the spiritual platform. But anything other than that, then that's temporary, and that will change. That will adjust. So that will create material happiness and lamentation. Or the relationships with the devotees, that will be spiritual emotion. After hearing instructions from their dead child, Chittaketu and his wife could understand that all relationships in this material world are causes of misery. The queens who administered poison to the son of Kritadyuti were very much ashamed. They atoned for the sinful act of killing a child and gave up their aspiration to have sons. Sorry? No, it wasn't that there was anything wrong. That's what was pointed out. It was just by the will of the Lord. So you have a couple who they're fine, they can't have sons, and you have couples that have so much difficulties they have. So it's that's another thing. But definitely now they'll have to give up their aspiration because there's a good chance that Chitraketu is going to move towards the Vanaprastha kind of position. Thereafter, Narad Muni chanted prayers to Narayana, who exists as Chaturvyuha, and instructed Chitraketu about the Supreme Lord, who creates, maintains, and annihilates everything, and who is the master of the material nature. After instructing King Chitraketu in this way, he returned to Brahmaloka. These instructions about the absolute truth are called the Mahavidya. After being initiated by Narad Muni, you don't have this page. You don't have 71.
No.
You don't have.
The original copy.
Do you have 72?
Yes.
Okay. It just goes straight to 97. Okay, so we'll just keep reading. Okay. After being initiated by Narad Muni, King Chitraketu chanted the Mahavidya, and after 1 week he attained the presence of Lord Sankarsana, who was surrounded by the four Kumaras. The Lord was nicely dressed in bluish garments, with a helmet and ornaments of gold. His face appeared very happy. Oh, that's the picture on the front of the cover. Right. There's a picture of Sankarsana. So that's Chitraketu. No? Haven't seen that picture. His face appeared very happy. In the presence of Lord Sankarsana, Chitraketu offered his obeisances and began to offer prayers. In his prayers, Chitraketu said that millions of universes rest in the pores of Sankarsana, who is limitless, having no beginning and end. The Lord is well known to the devotees for his eternity. The difference between worshipping the Lord and worshipping the demigods is that the worshipper of the Lord also becomes eternal, whereas whatever benedictions one can get from the demigods are impermanent. Unless one becomes a devotee, one cannot understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead. After Chitraketu finished his prayers, the unlimited Supreme Lord explained knowledge of himself to Chitraketu. Right, so we see his Angira, even though it appeared, he had Chitraketu asked for a material benediction, so it appeared that Angira had given him a material benediction, but actually he had given him actually the interest in spiritual life. Right? But how he was so absorbed and distracted, then it took something very severe for him to actually wake up to, again be situated in his natural Krishna consciousness. Shloka Anusharanam, summary of verses. Verses 1 to 11, the illusions of material relationships is explained. 12 to 16, King Chitraketu gives up his attachment. 17 to 26, Narad Muni glorifies the Supreme Lord. 27 to 32, Chitraketu chants the Mahavidya and receives darshan of Lord Sankarsana. 33 to 48, Chitraketu glorifies the Lord who expands as the entire cosmos but remains transcendental to it. 49 to 65, the Lord responds. we're clever, we could be saying all kinds of outrageous things, but because you don't have the page, you can't tell what's going on. Verses 66 to 73 explain what the Lord had for lunch. Verses 1 to 11. Sri Sukadeva Goswami said, "My dear Parikit, by his mystic power, the great sage Narada brought the dead son into the vision of all the lamenting relatives, and then spoke as follows." Right, so we see Vishwanath didn't have to put a summary, because it was already, it's already in the verses. The first verse already summarizes. Right, you know, there's always those little summaries before we start a section. Those are Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. Sri Narad Muni said, "O living entity, all good fortune unto you. Just see your father and mother." Okay, wait a minute. "By his mystic power, the great sage Narada brought the dead son into the vision of all the lamenting relatives, and then spoke as follows." Sri Narad Muni said, "O living entity, all good fortune unto you. Just see your father and mother. All your friends and relatives are overwhelmed with grief because of your passing away. Because you died untimely, the balance of your lifetime still remains. Therefore, you may re-enter your body and enjoy the remainder of your life, surrounded by your friends and relatives. Accept the royal throne and all the opulences given by your father." Verses 2 and 3. "By the mystic power of Narad Muni, the living entity re-entered his dead body for a short time and spoke in reply to Narad Muni's request. He said, 'According to the results of my fruitive activities, I, the living entity, transmigrate from one body to another, sometimes going to the species of the demigods, sometimes to the species of lower animals, sometimes among the vegetables, and sometimes to the human species. Therefore, in which birth were these my mother and father? No one is actually my mother and father. How can I accept these two people as my parents?'" Right? Says, which birth are they the mother and father? And besides that, since we're the soul, not the body, then technically they're not my mother and father in any birth, anyway. You know, so doubly, right? You know, which birth? You know, who? Like, and then really you're not, yes.
He was a child, so who
are you
speaking it to?
No, the point is when the soul is separate from the body, remember it's when they're on when they're just in the Mahatattva, they're in Vasudeva Sattva, so they're fully realized. The problem is, it's just being, when they go into, by their karma into the next body, then they get absorbed, there. You know, does that make sense? You know, it's just like the living entity in the womb, they're very Krishna conscious, and then when they, after birth, then they seem to forget everything. You know, somehow all the goo goo ga ga somehow does something to their brain.
Huh?
Yes.
This boy.
When the soul moves from one body to another, they take the subtle body with them. So when you come into the universe and you get mind, you have that until you leave. Right? It may transform its manifestation, but it's the same mind. Right? Same intelligence, same, you know, position of ego. Though you identify with this body or that body or this place or that place. You know, like even in this lifetime, you may be in one place and then you move to another place, you identify with there.
So?
No, it's not. The soul moves with the subtle body. And so both of them came back into the gross body, so we have a soul, a subtle body, and a gross body. Srila Prabhupada comments, "Here it is made clear that the living entity..."
We have a footnote.
Okay. 21. "According to Srila Vishnath Chakravarti Thakur, it is actually Narad Muni who is now speaking through the deceased child's body. not the jiva who was previously occupying said body. Okay, so then even more, it's just he's speaking, so he's doing that. So, in other words, this whole the point of the ventriloquist and all that, then that's an old thing also. Ventriloquist. Okay. The guy is sitting there, and he's gotten the wooden dummy sitting there, and there, and he's talking, and the dummy talks, and you never saw that. You know what I'm talking about? Yeah, okay. So I'm saying, so they're just trying to, you know, through a gross way, try to emulate what Narad Muni is able to do through his mystic powers. So you don't have to, you don't look over and see Narad Muni, like, talking or something. You know, so it's just...
Srila Prabhupada comments, here it is made clear that the living entity enters a material body, that it's like a machine created by the five gross elements of material nature, earth, water, fire, air, and sky, and the three subtle elements, mind, intelligence, and ego. As confirmed in Bhagavad Gita, there are two separate identities, called the inferior and superior natures, which both belong to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. According to the results of a living entity's fruit of activities, he is forced to enter the material elements in different types of bodies. Right? So these two separate entities, identities, inferior and superior, they both come from Krishna.
So all the different things that we have, you know, particular form, the particular nature, you know, all these different things, that's all coming from Krishna. It's all part of the universal form. So even that's not, we'll say, oh, this is me, or I don't like, I don't, but technically it's not. It's the Lord. So therefore, since it's from the Lord, it's to be engaged in the Lord's service. Then in the spiritual world, then the transcendental idea, they also come from Krishna. But there, everybody nicely uses them in Krishna's service, so there's no problem. Does that make sense? Because he is rasa, so that means all aspects of rasa are there in him. But these are inherent, these are natural positions for the soul. It means that soul does have that nature. But that nature originates in Krishna. So that's why then we will interact with Krishna based on that nature we have, because it comes from Krishna, so there's the common point. Therefore, each individual, no matter how unique they are, can have a nice relationship with Krishna. Right? Like for us, we can relate to certain people and certain people not, because the natures don't come from us. They come from the Supreme. So therefore, we may not have the particular nature qualities that the other person has, that there's something common, that there's a resonation. Does that make sense? So people that have something in common, you can have a relationship, and people that don't have something in common don't. But Krishna, since he's the origin of all qualities and all nature, therefore everybody has a relationship with him. Yes.
It means that we are related to Krishna, not to our condition, but according to the soul.
Yes, means the soul has actual qualities and all that. But in the material world, those get covered.
But when we relate to Krishna in our condition state.
Then we're just, but the point is, the condition state also comes from Krishna, so we can use that as a medium. But the thing is, but it has to be used in devotion, because Krishna has affection for us, we have to deal with him in affection. Otherwise, if we deal him in a mundane plane, then how much he's going to reciprocate. All those things are from him, but it doesn't mean he identifies with them. Is that the sense? Yeah. Yeah, therefore all things are in him, but he is not in them.
Person.
Yes, means he is a person separate. You know, or the other way, he's in everything, but it's not in him. You know, either way you look at it, he's Paramatma, he's in every atom, between every atom, but at the same time as those things aren't in him, he's above as a person. Or everything's in him because he's the Supreme, but it doesn't mean that makes his personality. Ooh. passes in one day. Okay. Okay. According to the results of a living entity's fruit of activities, he is forced to enter the material elements in different types of bodies, right? So these bodies are created by the Lord, and then by the Lord's potency, then the living entity has to enter them, though they're based on their specific desires. This time, the living entity was supposed to have been the son of Maharaj Chitraketu and Queen Kritadyuti, because according to the laws of nature, he had entered a body made by the king and queen. Actually, however, he was not their son. The living entity is the son of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And because he wants to enjoy this material world, the Supreme Lord gives him a chance to enter various bodies. The living entity has no true relationship with the material body he gets from his material mother and father. He is part and parcel of the Supreme Lord, but he's allowed to go through different bodies. The body created by the so-called father and mother actually has nothing to do with the so-called creators. Therefore, the living entity flatly denied that Maharaj Chitraketu and his wife were his father and mother, right? So means they're not actually created by the father and mother. It's still it may be through their agency, but the point is it's still the Lord creates. He creates the form for them. Does that make sense? Yes.
Can I say it just depends on whatever angle we emphasize?
Yes.
Because in one sense, all the scriptures, they talk about father and mother.
Because that's relationship. Because that's the duties you perform. But in actuality, they're not actually the father and mother.
That's on the platform of Tatra and Rasa. I mean, not Rasa, but...
No, but yes, it is. But it's the same time as... The jiva continued. In this material world, so we notice the jiva continued, rather Chitraketu's son continued. Because he already just flatly said, you know, one, on which parent set of parents, and two, is that the living entity is never anybody's son. It's always the son of the Supreme Lord. The relationship means that this is just how you interact. So since the jiva is, that's the medium that they can be related to, therefore we follow all the etiquettes connected with that. But it's not that actually is the living entity. In the spiritual world, that will be the living entity. The form they have, the duties they have, the nature, that is them. But here, it's the medium that they function through. So, all the Vaishnav, you know, qualities and that can be expressed through that. But the whole point is it will have its particular nature here. The jiva continued. In this material world, which advances like a river that carries away the living entity, all people become friends, relatives, and enemies in due course of time. They also act neutrally. They meditate. They despise one another. And they act in many other relationships. So many other. Meditate, despise each other. They are neutral. So many relationships, right? Nonetheless, despite these various transactions, no one is permanently related. If one's not Krishna conscious, no. Because one gets more attached, you know, because it's just the attachment. But one's attached to the principle of being attached to relationships. So the next body, one's not attached to that particular person or that, because you don't know them. You've moved on. You forget the previous person. Then you go on, but then you become attached to the next relationships. Right? So in other words, if you're cultivating attachment, you'll continue on that path. You're cultivating detachment, you'll continue on that.
But if you're cultivating bhakti, you'll move in that direction.
If you become detached from those from this life, then you eat the god of the man you would get.
Not necessarily. It's probably you become detached when you enter the next body. Right? Because otherwise you're leaving them and all this and that. I'm sure, see, for the living entity, when they're being taken away by Yamaraj and the Yamadutas and all that, they probably aren't too much remembering the family members right at that moment, because it's really freaky. But the point is he's still being dealt with what he's done in that life, so he's still connected with them. He'll suffer in hell for that. Now, once he goes in animal species, he's not going to remember it. And once he comes back to human species, he won't remember it.
Srila Prabhupada comments, "It is our practical experience in this material world that the same person who is one's friend today becomes one's enemy tomorrow. Our relationships as friends or enemies, family member, outsiders, are actually the results of our different dealings. Chittaketu Maharaj was lamenting for his son, who is now dead, but he could have considered the situation otherwise. This living entity, he could have thought, was my enemy in my last life, and now, having appeared as my son, he is prematurely leaving us just to give me pain and agony." End quote. Why should he not consider his dead son his former enemy, and instead of lamenting, be jubilant because of an enemy's death? As stated in Bhagavad Gita, right? So it's just perspective. That's the whole point. He becomes attached because of perspective. Or he could look at it in the other way, his perspective. It doesn't. As stated in Bhagavad Gita 3:27, Prakrite Kriyamanani Gunai Karmani Sarva Saha. Factually, everything is happening because of our association with the modes of material nature. Therefore, one who is my friend today in association with the mode of goodness may be my enemy tomorrow in association with the modes of passion and ignorance. As the modes of material nature work, in illusion we accept others as friends, enemies, sons, or fathers, in terms of the reactions of different dealings under different conditions. The jiva continued, "Just as gold and other commodities are continually transferred from one place to another in due course of purchase and sale, so the living entity, as a result of its fruitive activities, wanders throughout the entire universe, being injected with various bodies and different species of life by one kind of father after another." Srila Prabhupada comments, "It has already been explained that Chittaketu's son was his enemy in his past life, and had now appeared as his son just to give him more severe pain. Indeed, the untimely death of the son caused severe lamentation for the father. One may put forward the argument, quote, if the king's son was his enemy, how could the king have so much affection for him? End quote. In answer, the example is given that when someone's wealth falls into the hands of his enemy, the money becomes the enemy's friend. Then the enemy can use it for his own purposes. Indeed, he can even use it to harm his previous owner. Therefore, the money belongs neither to the one party nor to the other. The money is always money, but in different situations it can be used as an enemy or as a friend." Right? So, therefore, that situation, that conditioning, it's come this way. Now it means there it's being used as enemy, here it's being used as friend. Yeah. But the problem is the soul is separate. So actually, all these designations aren't that important. Jiva continued, "A few living entities are born in the human species, and others are born as animals. Although both are living entities, their relationships are impermanent. An animal may remain in the custody of a human being for some time, and then the same animal may be transferred to the possession of other human beings. As soon as the animal goes away, the former proprietor no longer has a sense of ownership. The former proprietor no longer has a sense of ownership. As long as the animal is in the possession, he certainly has an affinity for it. But as soon as the animal is sold, the affinity is lost." Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur elaborates. Right? So he's saying, I'm with you. Okay, so then you may have that. There may be some interaction. But as soon as then he transfers to somewhere else, then that affinity is lost.
The animals with one, you know, in one place, when they move to another place, they don't worry about the previous owners anymore.
Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur elaborates, "For some time I was the son of Chitraketu, and for some time he showed affection for me. Afterwards, I will be the son of someone else, and that person will show affection for me." This is illustrated by making a particular case to make a general statement. One object, like a coin, goes to another person's hand in one day during trading. Then it becomes his and no one else's for some time. The relationship is temporary.
So here he's giving the example. Give the example of the animal, but also then of money. You have a coin, and you know it's with someone else. But then he gives it to you in trade for something. Now it's yours and only yours, and so you have that affection. But then tomorrow you may take it to someone else and buy something from them. Now it's not yours. Now it's theirs. So we can't claim, oh well, that was my money. You know, I gave him so much money for a house, and so, but that's still my money. No, it's not. So.
The jiva continued, "Even though one living entity becomes connected with another because of a relationship based on bodies that are perishable, the living entity is eternal. Actually, it's the body that is born or lost, not the living entity. One should not accept that the living entity takes birth or dies. The living being actually has no relationship with so-called fathers and mothers. As long as he appears as the son of a certain father and mother as a result of his past fruit of activities, he has a connection with the body given by that father and mother. Thus, he falsely accepts himself as their son and acts affectionately. After he dies, however, the relationship is finished. Under these circumstances, one should not be falsely involved with jubilation and lamentation." Footnote 22. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur assigns this verse to Bhagavad Arkamarichi Mala, Chapter 7, entitled "The Essential Nature of the Individual Soul," Jiva Tattva, which is in the Sambandha section of the Thakur's book.
What's the Sambandha? Means
the Jiva Tattva, because you're explaining, means in Sambandha Gyan, you have the explanation of the Lord, the living entity, and the Lord's energies. That's all Sambandha Gyan.
So here we're explaining the nature of the jiva,
you know, in the material world. One is his transcendental position, but two, you know, how he's in the position of being conditioned. Remember, it means there's three concerning Krishna, right? How he's the supreme absolute truth, how he's the, you know, the Lord of all energies, and how he is the, you know, origin or Lord of rasa. Right, and the jivas, then you have jiva tattva itself, right? Then you have the conditioned soul and the liberated soul. So this will be in the section on the condition, on just on jivas themselves. Right? So that's six, three and three is six, and then the seventh one is the chintaveda veda tattva. That's the connection, or that's the relationship between all of these.
The living entity is eternal and imperishable because he actually has no beginning and no end. He never takes birth or dies. He is the basic principle of all types of bodies. Yet he does not belong to the bodily category. Right? He's the basic principle of all the bodies because it's his desire. Therefore the body manifests according to that particular nature that he's interested in and by karma that he would deserve. But actually he's not the body. Right. Body's in connection, right? Because he's the principle behind it. When the soul is there, then the body functions. It grows, it maintains, but as soon as the soul leaves, then the body, you know, again goes back into the elements. The living entity is so sublime that he is equal in quality to the Supreme Lord. Nonetheless, because he is extremely small, he is prone to be illusioned by the external energy, and thus he creates various bodies for himself according to his different desires. 8-9. Srila Prabhupada comments. One particular characteristic of the jiva is that he becomes covered by maya. Atma maya gunai. He is prone to being covered by the Supreme Lord's illusory energy. The living entity is responsible for his conditional life in the material world, and therefore is described as Prabhu, the Master. If he likes, he can come to this material world, and if he likes, he can return home back to Godhead. Because he wanted to enjoy this material world, the Supreme Personality of Godhead gave him a material body through the agency of the material energy. Because he wants to. So he gets, through the agency of the material energy, he gets a material body. He originally has a spiritual body through the agency of the internal potency, and so he can use that to serve Krishna. But if he prefers not to, then he's through the agency of Maya is given the material body. And then if we change that mood that we want to serve Krishna, then through the agency of the spiritual nature, we'll get our spiritual body back. Right? As the Lord Himself says in the Bhagavad Gita, 1861, Ishvara sarva bhutanam hridesh ter juna tishtati brahmayan sarva bhutani yantrarudhani mayaya. The Supreme Lord is situated in everyone's heart, O Arjuna, and is directing the wanderings of all living entities, who are seated as on a machine made of the material energy. The Supreme Lord gives the living entity a chance to enjoy in this material world as he desires, but he openly expresses his own desire that the living entity give up all material aspirations, fully surrender unto him, and return home back to Godhead. The jiva continued. For this living entity, no one is dear, nor is anyone unfavorable. He makes no distinction between that which is his own and that which belongs to anyone else. He is one without a second. In other words, he is not affected by friends and relatives, enemies, well-wishers or mischief mongers. He is only an observer, a witness of the different qualities of men. Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur elaborates. The Lord does not have relationships due to ignorance, such as relatives through marriage, relatives on the father's side, enemies, and enemies disguised as friends. That is explained in this verse. The Lord does not like or hate anyone. However, the devotee is very dear to the Lord, who considers the devotee to be himself. He shows...
Can we say that this is not the part of
means? No, this is just showing just the nature of the soul.
I'm speaking about the Lord. And he doesn't like or hate anyone?
Means in the material world. He doesn't have any. Means he is creating all these things, but he doesn't have any.
Your mother-in-law, is there a relationship that Krishna now she's his mother-in-law? No. That's what it's talking about.
Means he's the source of all these relations, but they have nothing to do with him. So he's not attracted, he's not attached, he doesn't get involved. He's just the living entity once he arranges them.
So it's on the level of Brahmanikarma?
Basically, yes. But it's not that he doesn't have relations with the devotees. That he does. It's just in the material platform he doesn't have. But these relations with the devotees don't cause this material, doesn't cause ignorance.
He's always on the transcendental platform. So it's just a relationship based on the interaction of that devotional one. So.
The Lord does not like or hate anyone. However, the devotee is very dear to the Lord, who considers the devotee to be himself. He shows, so he doesn't, the point is all living entities are his. But those who reciprocate in devotion, then he has that special affection because he reciprocates. Right? They see him neutral, he's neutral. He shows anger to those who hate the devotees and considers them enemies and different from himself. Thus the Gita says, Samoham sarva bhuteshu na me dveshosti na priyaha. Ye bhajanti tumam bhaktya Maite Teshu Chapyaham. I am equal to all living beings. I do not hate anyone, nor do I favor anyone. To whatever extent a person worships me with devotion, I am attached to him in a similar way. Bhagavad Gita 9:29. Right? So, whatever extent a person worships him with devotion, I am attached to him in a similar way. So, we have greater devotion, he reciprocates in that greater way. We have less, he has less. Right? But he's always encouraging and trying to create it to get more and more, because that's his capacity. Then tamaham dvishatas kuran samsareshu naradhaman shipam yajashram ashubhan ashurish veva yonishu. I cast those hateful, cruel, and lowest of humans, constantly doing evil, into repeated birth and death in the wombs of demons. Bhagavad Gita 16:19. These are ornaments, not faults, in the Lord, who is affectionate to his devotees. The jivas are many and the Lord is one. The Lord is a witness of all the jivas with various types of intelligence, who then act as friend or enemy for the benefit of misfortune. The Lord is a witness of all the jivas with various types of intelligence, who then act as friend or enemy for the benefit or misfortune, guna doshayo, of someone else, right? Okay, so he's just a witness. And then by the karma, the action of the living entity, he gets his particular body, his situation. Then he gets various types of intelligence. He uses that, therefore, to be friends with someone, enemies with somebody, be nice to someone, give trouble to someone else. Right? Because people use their intelligence to do that. You know, it's not that you're sitting there in japa and the person next to you suddenly, you know, you move too much, you move suddenly and they just, you know, reach over and bite your elbow or something. Right? You know, animals, they use their intelligence. Why, you had somebody bite your elbow? Srila Prabhupada adds, the Lord is extremely antagonistic towards those who are envious of his devotees. The jiva continued. Okay, the Lord is extremely antagonistic to those who are envious of his devotees. So those who are envious, then the Lord is antagonistic. So they'll always have problems. But at the same time, is there's so many things to learn, develop. There's so many, the expansion of the Lord's, you know, Sankirtan pastime. So how it will unfold in that, that's up to the Lord. The jiva continued. The Supreme Lord, Atma, the creator of cause and effect, does not accept the happiness and distress that result from fruitive actions. He is completely independent of having to accept a material body, and because he has no material body, he is always neutral. The living entities, being part and parcel of the Lord, possess his qualities in a minute quantity. Therefore, one should not be affected by lamentation. Right? He doesn't get involved, we shouldn't get involved. Right? We have the same qualities of the Lord, though minute, but we can be involved with the Lord. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur elaborates. The jiva recognizes persons as friends or enemies, by which he then experiences happiness and suffering as a result of his actions. The Lord is not like that. The Lord does not see others as friend or enemy and does not accept reactions for his acts. He is situated as the Antaryami, Udasinavat, in all beings, and witnesses the good and bad actions of the jiva. He seems to be, Eva, indifferent to the contrary natures of being friendly or inimical, but he is not, since he favors the devotees. Without surrender to the Lord caused by mercy of devotees, difficulties arise for persons like Chituketu, who are overcome by grief and delusion to cross over samsara. What more can I say? This is the meaning of this section. Okay, so he's saying, When surrenders to the Lord by the mercy of the devotees, right? So by the mercy of Krishna, one gets the association of devotees. By the mercy of the devotees, one gets, therefore, surrenders to Krishna, right? So this is important. So he's saying is, therefore, we should not be overwhelmed by
grief and illusion. He says, you know, what more can I say? This is the meaning of this section. That's what it's about. Verses 12 to 16. King Chitraketu gives up his attachment. Sri Sukadeva Goswami continued, when the conditioned soul, Jiva, in the form of Maharaj Chitraketu's son, had spoken in this way and then left, Chitraketu and the other relatives of the dead son were all astonished. Thus they cut off the shackles of their affection, which was due to their relationship with him, and gave up their lamentation. After the relatives had discharged their duties by performing the proper funeral ceremonies and burning the dead child's body, they gave up the affection that leads to illusion, lamentation, fear, and pain. Such affection is undoubtedly difficult to give up, but they gave it up very easily. Queen Krityaduti's co-wives, who had poisoned the child, were very much ashamed, and they lost all their bodily luster. While lamenting, O king, they remembered the instructions of Angira and gave up their ambition to bear children. Following the directions of the Brahmanas, they went to the bank of the Jamuna, where they bathed and atoned for their sinful activities. Srila Prabhupada comments. In this verse, the word Bala Hatya Hata Prabaha is to be particularly noted. The practice of killing children has existed in human society for a long time, since time immemorial, but in days of yore it was very rarely performed. At the present moment, however, in the age of Kali, abortion, killing the child within the womb, has become very common, and sometimes the child is even killed after birth. The woman performs such an abominable act, she gradually loses all her bodily luster. Bala Hatya Hata Prabaha. Or Prabhaha. It is also to be noted that ladies who had committed the sinful act of administering poison to the child were very much ashamed, and according to the direction of the Brahmanas, they had to undergo atonement for killing the child. Any woman who has ever performed such an infamously sinful act must atone for it, but no one now is doing that. Under the circumstances, the women responsible must suffer in this life and the next. Those who are sincere souls, after hearing this incident, should refrain from such child killing, should atone for the sinful acts by taking to Krishna consciousness very seriously. One chants the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra without offenses. All of one's sinful actions are surely atoned for immediately. But one should not commit such deeds again, for that is an offense. Right? So you've done. One takes up Krishna consciousness sincerely, one chants, one purifies oneself, one should not do them again. Otherwise, then now that'll be even more of a problem. Srila Sukadeva Goswami continued, thus enlightened by the instructions of the Brahmanas, Angira and Narada, King Chitraketu became fully aware of spiritual knowledge. As an elephant becomes free from a muddy reservoir of water, King Chitraketu came out of the dark well of family life. The king bathed in the water of the Jamuna, and according to prescribed duties, he offered oblations of waters to the forefathers and demigods. Very gravely, controlling his senses and mind, he then offered his respects and obeisances to the sons of Lord Brahma, Angira and Narada, 15 through 16. Stop there.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Premanandini.